So tonight is Isaiah 53, which is the suffering servant text. It's a really important passage for our faith. So I'm sure you're familiar with it. I think Kevin said earlier, it's probably the one chapter of Isaiah that most Christians are familiar with.
And 40.
Yeah, and Isaiah 40. I'm not sure why Isaiah 40 is much, but...
Because it's quoted a lot.
Yeah. Yep. There's one of each, okay?
So the
reason is that, you know, this is the passage which depicts this servant of the Lord that we were studying a couple weeks ago, this servant of the Lord suffering on behalf of the sins of the nation, suffering for the sins of Israel. So... remember when we began the topic of the servant of the Lord, we had a discussion, an argument really, we were looking at an ancient argument of whether the servant of the Lord is the nation of Israel or the Messiah. Two different opinions. Christianity obviously saying the servant of the Lord is Messiah. Judaism saying the servant of the Lord is Israel. And now we understand, as we come to this passage, we understand why this is an argument and why this is important. Because if the servant of the Lord is the nation of Israel, then this passage is talking about the suffering of Israel of Israel in exile. If the servant of the Lord is the Messiah, then it turns out that contrary to the mainstream opinion of Judaism, Yeshua of Nazareth is a qualified candidate to be the Messiah. If this passage is not talking about a suffering Messiah, then there's no basis for a suffering Messiah. You know, this whole idea of a suffering Messiah is out. And so Jesus is out. Christianity is out. Yeah, so it's kind of that, this is why this is like one of the most contested pieces of property in the entire Bible, is Isaiah 52 and 53. I'm going to teach you tonight. I'm going to teach you the minority opinion from Judaism on Isaiah 52 and 53, and I'm also going to teach you the apostolic interpretation of the passages, and we're going to go pretty fast. We're going to have to go pretty fast because we have so much material here. And there's a lot more where this came from. But the official interpretation, if you were to read the Rashi or something like that, is that this section refers to the Jewish people in exile whom he calls my servant. That's fine, that is the official interpretation, but the only reason that that's the official interpretation is because Judaism has been boxed into the corner on this one. Ever since the second century, Christians have been assaulting Jews with Isaiah 52 and 53 and saying, see, it's so clearly about Jesus. How can you not believe in Jesus when it's so clearly about the suffering of Jesus? And so as a response to this polemic, Judaism has suppressed the messianic interpretation of the passage. But you don't have to dig very far to find that that messianic interpretation is still alive and kicking, usually in Hebrew sources, but it's still there. Okay, so, for example, 14th century rabbi named Rabbi Moshe Cohen Ibn Crispin, son of Crispin, we'll just call him Ibn Crispin from now on, of Cordova, right? He says this in his introduction to comments on this chapter. He says, other commentaries on the suffering servant distort the verses from their natural meaning. And then it seemed to me that the doors to the literal interpretation of the parsha of this section of scripture were shut in their face, and that they wearied themselves to find the entrance, having forsaken the knowledge of our teachers and inclined after the stubbornness of their own hearts and their own opinion. I am pleased to interpret it in accordance with the teaching of our rabbis of the King Messiah. So what he's saying, and I want you to understand the importance of this quotation, Rabbi Moshe Cohen Ibn Crispin is saying, okay, nowadays you pick up any commentary, any Jewish commentary on the book of Isaiah, it's going to say that this passage is not about the Messiah. But in trying to defend the idea that this passage is not about the Messiah, you're missing the point of the passage. So he says, I am pleased to go back to the older sources, the teachings of the rabbis, that is from the Talmud and from the mystical sources and so forth. I'm pleased to go back to the older sources and teach it as it's meant to be taught, that this is about the Messiah. And he's not a believer. The other sage we're going to be looking at, well, the other rabbi we're going to be looking at tonight is, you will recognize, Ramban. That's Rabbi Rabbi Moses Nachmanides, son of Nachman. Not Rambam, but Ramban. Okay? He is also going to give us an interpretation of Isaiah 53 according to the old messianic understanding of the text. But the point is, I mean, long story short, we could just cut this whole, we could skip all this tonight, just make this point, that Judaism used to interpret this passage as a prophecy of the suffering of Messiah on behalf of the nation of Israel. That Messiah would suffer for the sins of the people of Israel. That's the old interpretation. All right, so let's take a look. Here we're going to get started in Isaiah 52:13, where it says, "Behold, my servant will prosper. He will be high and lifted up and greatly exalted." The Targums identify this servant as the Messiah. It says, "Behold, my servant, the Messiah, will prosper. He will be high, lifted up, and greatly exalted." The Midrash called Yalkut Shimoni says this refers to the King Messiah. He is greater. See, there's three things here. He's going to be high, lifted up, and greatly exalted. So he is greater than the patriarchs. As it is said, my servant will be high and lifted up and greatly exalted. Higher than Abraham, number one. Lifted up above Moses, number two. And more exalted than the ministering angels, number three. This same tradition finds its way into the mystical material. So we can read in the Zohar where it says, "Behold, my servant will prosper. He will be high and lifted up and greatly exalted. He will be high above the upper light of all the luminaries. He will be lifted up above Abraham, lofty above Isaac, greatly exalted above Jacob. All the dead who are in the dust will then awake. This is the mystery of my servant, in whose hands are the keys of his master, as were Abraham's in those of Eliezer." Right, that's the Zohar. Here's another one. This is from the book of Hebrews. Using the same, because we're doing Isaiah in the New Testament, using the same sort of approach now, and understanding this very verse as applying to the Messiah, we get these statements from the writer of the book of Hebrews. "He sat down at the right hand of majesty on high, having become as much better or higher than the angels, as he has inherited a more excellent name, and he has been counted worthy of more glory than Moses." Does this sound familiar? It's like the writer of the book of Hebrews is quoting the Midrashim that we were just reading. Here's one from Philippians. "For this reason also, God highly exalted him." That language is borrowed directly from Isaiah 52:13. "The Messiah is lifted far above all rule and authority and power and dominion in every name that is named, not only in this age, but in the one to come." That's Ephesians 1:21. So this kind of language that we're familiar with, so familiar with from the apostles, we'll find again and again and again that they are actually borrowing it from here in Isaiah. Okay, so that's the introduction to the passage. Should establish who we're talking about. We're talking about King Messiah. It goes on, it says, "Just as many were astonished at you, so his appearance was marred more than any man, his form more than the sons of men." All right. Ramban explains this verse this way. He says, They were astonished. Why were they astonished? Their astonishment was shown by mocking him when he first arrived and asking how one who is despised and meek and riding on a donkey could conquer all the kings of the world who had laid hold upon Israel and rescue him from their land. So Ramban says, here's what it means. It means when Israel sees the Messiah, they're not going to think he's the Messiah. They're going to despise him as someone who couldn't possibly be the Messiah. This is Ramban's explanation. He's not a believer, you understand. He doesn't read the New Testament. He's not looking at the story of Jesus and saying, how can I make that fit with Isaiah? You know, that's just, he reads the text and he says, this is what it means. It means Israel will reject the Messiah and say, you couldn't possibly be the Messiah. Okay, here's how Philippians takes this verse about his appearance from the sons of man, his form, or his appearance from, you have to trust me on the reading for a moment. We're going to translate it this. We're going to translate it as his appearance from a man, his appearance, and his form from the sons of man. Okay, just for a moment, so that you can hear it in Philippians, where it says he emptied himself, taking the form of a bondservant, being made in the likeness of men, being found in the appearance as a man. He humbled himself, becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. For this reason also, God highly exalted him. And you've heard those verses probably many, 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 many times. But I want you to see how the language for these verses is just borrowed right out of the text of Isaiah and rearranged. Paul has in mind, as he's writing this famous passage of Christology, he has in mind Isaiah 52:13-14. There's a problem with the text, though. What is the problem with the text? The problem is when it says, his appearance was marred more than any man, his form this more than the sons of men. Here's the problem. What does that mean? That the Messiah's appearance is marred more than any man. Well, the Christian explanation, you know, when you read the Gospels, and said, well, it must refer to the crucifixion. That this is how he suffered, his suffering in the crucifixion marred him more than any man, and his appearance was marred from the crucifixion. And that could be. Maybe that is the correct interpretation. However, it doesn't seem right to me. It's difficult. The Hebrew is difficult in the first place to translate that way. It comes off funny. But that doesn't seem right to me in any case. Here we are at the top of the passage. And is it even really true? Was our Master's appearance marred more than any man? Than any human being has ever been marred from the crucifixion? No, I don't think so. People suffer, human bodies suffer all sorts of horrible indignities. So there's a problem with the text. Not just the interpretive problem, but there's a problem with the text in that, you know, the Dead Sea Scrolls, and we've talked about that in the past, Isaiah, the great Isaiah scroll that was found at Qumran. The Dead Sea Scrolls read differently at this point. My brother wrote a big article on this. In fact, we did a whole Messiah journal dedicated to the Isaiah 53 in the Dead Sea Scrolls, Great Isaiah Scroll. So in Hebrew, in the Masoretic text, it reads, "Kain mishchat me'ish." So his appearance was marred more than a man me'ish. Kain mishchat me'ish. So mishchat is being translated as marred. Literally, that would be Cain, yes, mishchat, marred, me'ish, from a man. And so we're actually having to do some work to get to his appearance was marred more than any man. All right, in the Dead Sea Scrolls version of Isaiah, it reads differently. It says, Cain, mashakti, me'ish. The difference is one little letter. You see the little letter yod on the end of mashak or mishchat? If you add a little letter yod, it no longer says mishchat, it says mashakti. And what is mashakti? Well, you know the word mashiach, anointed one. Mashakti is to anoint. So, Cain, mashakti is, yes, I have anointed me'ish from a man. I have anointed one from men, would be a way to put it. So it's as if it's in the Dead Sea Scrolls, it's totally different meaning. One letter makes a totally different meaning. So where, this is how my brother translates the verse then, based on the Dead Sea Scrolls reading. It is certain I have anointed from a man his appearance and his form from the sons of Adam. That's a pretty significant textual variant. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of times we see in our comparisons, we've already seen this in this class already, we see that the textual variants that appear in the great Isaiah scroll from the Dead Sea Scrolls accords with some of the readings on Isaiah that the apostles used. So I think it's very likely that that is the version of Isaiah that the apostles were familiar with. So it's never a question for them about, you know, this passage, does this apply to Israel or is it? And it does apply to Israel. Everything that applies to the Messiah also applies to the nation. Everything that applies to the nation also applies to the Messiah. He's the king of the nation. And so this is, at the same time, it's about the suffering of the nation. Yes, that interpretation is completely valid. But the Peshat, the literal, what is literally being communicated here is that this servant of the Lord is suffering on behalf of the nation. Okay. What will he do? He says in verse 15, thus he will sprinkle many nations. Kings will shut their mouths on account of him. For what had not been told them, they will see. What they had not heard, they will understand. There's some discussion. What does it mean? He will sprinkle many nations. The rabbis aren't really sure what to do with this. There's some different suggestions. Don't really have a good suggestion of how to interpret this from the sages. But the apostles knew what to do with it. The apostles, so here was Isaiah in the New Testament, Hebrews 12:24, the sprinkled blood which speaks better than the blood of Abel, and 1 Peter 1:2, the sanctifying work of the Spirit to obey Yeshua the Messiah and be sprinkled with his blood. So they're interpreting it as a sacrificial rite, you know, the sprinkling of blood or the sprinkling of the purifying water of the ashes of the red heifer. They're using that kind of symbolism and applying that to the atonement through Messiah. It says kings will shut their mouths at him. That's an error where it says 52:16. That's still 15. Kings will shut their mouths. What does this mean? Well, here's how the Greek translates it. Thus many nations will wonder at him, and kings shall keep their mouths shut, for they to whom no report was brought concerning him shall see, and they who have not heard shall consider. So according to the Greek interpretation of the passage, what it means when kings will shut their mouths is that these are the kings of the nations who are going to be, the Messiah is going to be revealed to the kings of the nations, and they're going to be astonished, they're going to be astounded. And this is how Paul uses the verse. It says in Romans 15, thus I aspired to preach the gospel not where Christ was already named, so that I would not build on another man's foundation, but as it is written, they who had no news of him shall see, they who have not heard shall understand. And he's quoting here then from the Greek of Isaiah 52.